thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Yeah. Here's John Williams.
Except for that last one. It is 209. Actually, I think them all. Big ones, little ones, without a filter, I might add. Here we go.
Lord have mercy.
All the way until 3. Thanks for tuning in. This is John Williams. More of the show dedicated to this topic today than I thought it would be, but it's been not only interesting, but I'm glad you've been playing along. Lots of calls. And just one more guess on this topic. We will cut away certainly to the president's remarks as soon as they become available. But Amy Goldstein, jump in here with us for a couple of minutes, health policy reporter at Washington Post, to answer a couple of questions about what this means. Hi, Amy. It's John. You're on WGN in Chicago.
Good to be with you, John.
I think the big component that people are still wondering about is pre-existing conditions. Can you give us any insight into that, Amy?
Yes. Well, pre-existing conditions refer to a lot of acute or chronic illnesses such as cancer or heart failure or asthma or things that people have that require them to need more medical care than people who are healthy. And this has really been a bone of contention among Republicans within the House GOP conference in the past week or so. And finding a way to satisfy what both the most conservative Republicans in the House and more moderate Republicans wanted was really the linchpin to getting enough votes to get this bill passed today. And what happened last week was an amendment was added to the bill that gave states the power, if they wanted to move away from a requirement in the Affordable Care Act that said that insurers could no longer charge more to people who had these pre-existing medical conditions. And that made some of the conservatives happy, but it caused a lot of concern among some of the healthcare advocacy groups around the country and also some of the House moderate Republicans who were worried that the sickest people who most need insurance could be kind of stranded. So in the end, yesterday, another amendment came along that added some more money, $8 billion over 5 years, to try specifically to help such people be able to afford coverage, whether it's enough money, how many states will try to move away from the federal requirement that's been in the ACA are still questions that are very much open.
So a state does not have to afford that anymore. That is, a state can say that our insurance companies can deny you coverage. If you have a pre-existing condition, do they have that option? Is that what you're saying?
Well, what would happen is that a state would have to, this is a little bit nerdy, but it's how it would work. A state would have to apply to the federal government, to the Health and Human Services Department, to get permission to say that. And if they got that permission, I don't think that they could outright deny coverage to people with pre-existing medical conditions, but they could go back to the pre-ACA era in which they could charge those customers more.
Well, maybe they should, right? I mean, if I do have a pre-existing condition, I am going to use more healthcare services, perhaps, or they will be more expensive if I do. Maybe the logic behind that is sound, Amy.
Well, this has been a debate that has gone on for years and years and years, long before, you know, this recent kind of rush by the new administration in Washington in the White House and the House Republicans to try to get this bill passed. There's been a longstanding debate about how best to ensure people who do need more medical care, whether they should be part of the overall insurance pools, which is what the Affordable Care Act strategy was, or whether they should be covered by separate plans that are just for people who are sick. Before the ACA came along, about two-thirds of the states had something called high-risk pools that were just an attempt to make sure that people who were sick or had histories of illnesses that made insurers wary of them, that those people could get coverage. Now, in practical terms, these often turned out to be very expensive kinds of insurance that states underfunded often and that were too expensive for the people who needed them. There's been a lot of back and forth over many years over what to do with these customers.
Has this resolved that? I mean, this is
well,
the resolution, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is one idea for how to resolve it.
Yeah.
You know, today's bill is just a first start. Obviously, what's just passed the House will now go to the Senate, where there aren't quite as many conservative Republicans. And, you know, who knows what ideas are going to emerge there over how perhaps to adjust the ideas that are in this House bill.
Is this robbing Peter to pay Paul, though? That is, we say, all right, we can't afford that, so we're going to go ahead and put you in these separate pools, but then we're going to set money from everybody else, once again, aside to help you afford it so that your premiums will stay low. Well, that was the idea with Obamacare to begin with. So is this really fundamentally different in that?
Well, I think even beyond this question of people with pre-existing medical issues, there are larger robbing Peter to pay Paul questions and different ways of looking at this. Overall, this bill would mean that the federal government is spending less to carry out government health care policies than the Affordable Care Act has been doing for several years. The bill would, for instance, eliminate taxes that have been part of the ACA that have helped to pay to carry out parts of the current law. For instance, taxes on insurers would go away. Taxes on individuals and families with high incomes would go away. There are also, in this bill, very different ideas for how to structure some form of financial help for people who buy individual health plans. And the bottom line of that is there are winners and losers. On balance, younger adults and healthier people would probably, for the most part, pay less than they do under the Affordable Care Act's marketplaces. But older people, older adults, pre-Medicare age, people in their 50s and early 60s, on balance, would be paying significantly more. So there's just a big set of trade-offs that are carried out, that are embodied in this legislation.
I have about 60 seconds left. Can you just tell me generally, and I'll bet you can't, what's this going to do to people's premiums? I mean, forget the high-risk pools, just speaking generally about people. The complaints on all the talk shows have been that our premiums are through the roof and we can't afford them with the deductibles alone. So what does this do to people's premiums generally or the cost of their insurance?
Well, I've got a very simple, vague answer for you, which is time will tell. I mean, that's the big question, right? I mean, what's going to happen? It's a question that has several parts. I mean, what will insurers do overall? This is right at the time of the year with insurers that have been participating in the ACA marketplaces, the exchanges, needing to decide whether they're going to participate again for the coming year. So there are a lot of things that are up in the air right now.
It's nice to talk to you, Amy. I hope you can join us again. I see the president is getting ready to address the world, certainly members of the Republican members of the House on the White House lawn. So we're going to cut away to that. But thanks for your time this afternoon.
Glad to speak with you.
Amy Goldstein is the health policy reporter for, it says here, Washington Post.